Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankaravavahai
According to Shastras, the current age, Kali Yuga, would create continual degradation in society. And Abai could see this evidence everywhere, or every day in Delhi. Delhi, formerly known as Hastinapur, had been the ancient capital of King Yudhishthira, who 5,000 years before, under the patronage of Lord Krishna, had been the most opulent king in the world and whose citizens had been fully protected and provided for. Now, after 1,000 years of foreign subjugation, India was again independent and New Delhi was the capital. Yet, even in Abhai's relatively brief 60 years of experience, he had seen Indian culture, which in his childhood had retained much of the original purity of the Vedic age, degrade. Now he saw a society in which his countrymen were victimized by the propaganda that they should be happy in gross materialistic indulgence. The British had introduced tea, tobacco, meat, and factories. And now, even after independence, these were part of India's new way of life. Having driven away the British, the Indians were imitating Western ways. And India's leaders were deliberately ignoring the Vedic principles of God consciousness. The very treasures India was meant to distribute to the whole world. Abai had seen how India had abandoned her spiritual heritage and gone running after the modernization of the West. But now, where was that material advancement? Were Indians any happier in their independence than they had been in British days? To Abai, the overpopulated city was a hell of ruffians and fools. Although thousands of poor people were employed in the burgeoning steel mills and tire factories, their living conditions had worsened. So we're dealing here, you have Kali Yuga, right? And so then in Kali Yuga, that's specifically the age for things to be degraded, right? If you're going to have a cycle, then you're going to have to have that place where everything is very nice. Everybody follows everything very purely and everything. But they're even, let's say, you could say, beyond the standard, right? So they're paramahamsas. So the normal standard, they're even beyond. So they're completely all self-realized, right? Then you come down into the Treta and Dwapara, where people are then dealing, you know, in what you call, you know, standard Vedic life. Right, so then Treta Yuga will be more on, you know, the religious aspects than that, and then Dwapara it'll be, you know, fairly solid, but it's starting to get less. And then in Kali Yuga, then they're living below the standard. Right? Does that make sense? So then you have a complete cycle. So he sings that previously Delhi, that was the place of Hastinapur, of Yudhishthira Maharaja's capital. That was greatly opulent, so nicely arranged, so nicely protected. You know, everything was perfectly organized, everyone is happy. And now he's seeing that this capital now, you know, doesn't seem to have that same flavor, right? There's a little bit less of a standard there. So, and here's that that the British were there. The place the British made their capital there. The Mughals, that was their capital, and so it was like for 1,000 years. Then India had been under the control of others. And so now, finally, they were free from all that. Now they could follow their culture nicely. There's no outside influence there. But, unfortunately, they got rid of the British, but they were still focused on all these outside influences. Right? The idea was, is if you're going to be independent, why do you need to be independent? You want to be independent so you can follow your own culture. Right? But so now they have the independence, they don't follow the culture. Right? So now they've kicked out now the British, but all the ways of life that British introduced, they're keeping. And so then what's happening is that the conditions aren't any better than they were before. In fact, they're worse, because the British were at least good organizers. Right? So there would at least be the look that everything's very nice. Maybe it wasn't, but at least it looked nice. But now it's besides being not nice like in the British times, it also falls apart and doesn't look nice. So the conditions of everybody are just worsening. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that. So Srila Prabhupada seeing that when he was young, you would see very much all people just naturally following the behavior, so it was more like the Vedic time. And now you can see is now they're starting to take up more of the British. Now, what is the difference there? What changed? This is a very important point. What changed between when Prabhupada was younger and he was older?
Culture.
Consciousness. The culture, yes. Culture changed, and then?
Consciousness.
The consciousness changed. So, when people say, oh, it's Kali Yuga, you can't do all these things, what has changed?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. So, can you change consciousness back? Yes. So, the environment is there. Just like, let's say, you have a kitchen, right? Just, you know, there's a kitchen, right? And so, in this kitchen, you have all facilities for cooking, right? And you can cook nicely in this kitchen, right? It's a good kitchen. Now, let's say you're in a good mood. Are you happy to cook in the kitchen? Okay, what happens if you're in a bad mood? Right? You don't want to cook in the kitchen. So what's changed? Yeah, the consciousness, the mentality, that's changed. Has the kitchen changed? No, that's the important point. So even though it's Kali Yuga, the material energy is still the same. It didn't change. You understand? So that means you can have Satya Yuga consciousness if you want. Just the tendency is those people who want to have Satya Yuga consciousness, then they appear in Satya Yuga. Those who have Treta Yuga, they appear there, Dwarpa. And then in Kali Yuga, those of the Kali Yuga mentality, they appear. But the material energy itself can accommodate all three, all four. You understand? Does that make sense? You know, or let's take another one. You have a classroom, all right? So in this classroom, then you have, you know, the senior students there, and they're studying philosophy and all these things. They're behaving nicely and this and that. Then after that, they leave the next period. Other kids come in. You know, they're a little bit younger. You know, it's not so philosophical, you know, but they do okay, the good classes and everything like that. Then they go, and then another group comes in. They're a little smaller, younger than that. And, you know, they're doing basically, you know, primary stuff and like this and that. But, you know, they do quite good like that. Their understanding is quite good. Then they go out, and then all the little monsters with the green shutters on come in. And all they do is fight and yell and scream and this and that. Couldn't care less about the teacher, less about the class or anything. Has the classroom changed? No, only the people in it have changed. So this idea, it's Kali Yuga, so therefore we can't follow the Vedic culture. What is that? It's just an excuse. Yes? Yeah. So what they're saying is, because the little kids are in the classroom has changed. In other words, they're saying the kids are the controlling factor. You know what I'm saying? But materialized state, birds still fly, trees still grow, grass is still green, you know, like that. Dogs bark, fleas bite, you know, what has changed? Nothing's changed. So it's consciousness. So it's your individual choice, right? Because now people are wanting independence, their free will. People really worry about karma. You know, is it predestiny? Is it free will? But if it's free will, it means you can do whatever you want. People want to be free. I want to do whatever I want to do. Dress however I want to dress. Talk how I want to talk. Do anything I want to do. Okay, fine. So then if that's the principle, everybody can do whatever they want. So why can't we act as transcendentalists? Why can't we follow the Vedic culture? If you want, you can do it. Because that's the motto. Do whatever you want to do. Right? Does that make sense? So this is very important. So the other is just an excuse. Oh, it's the way it is. How can we do anything different? So then why don't you just do what everybody does? Says, no, no, I have to be independent and unique. You understand? So it's just an excuse that people use to not follow. You can easily follow. What's the problem? You know what I'm saying? Everything that's going on now always went on. Just they're more messy about it now. That's all. Like that. But what's changed? People didn't have houses before. Yudhishthira Maharaj lived, you know, under a tree. Well, he did at one time. But let me just say, they didn't have houses, you know, they didn't have vehicles, right? They didn't have animals, right? There were no families, right? You know, what's the difference? People didn't eat food then, right? Vedic age, no one ate food. Maybe they didn't breathe air. They must have not drank water, right? Right? So then? So all these things are going on. They even in previous ages played the same village games. Right? That's why we prefer these local games rather than other games. Because those have always been played. You know that what do you call it? That Indian... You know the Indian hide-and-seek game? That one? You guys have ever learned to play? You know, like that, and then when you're it's something, I don't remember how it goes because it's so complicated. They cover your eyes and you have to catch it. What do you call that? Yeah, but what's the game called? Hide-and-seek. Hide-and-seek. That's the Indian way, is it? Hide-and-seek, right? Okay. Huh? Dupachupi. Okay, that's what they call. So that game, it's mentioned that, you know, in the story of the, you know, that whole story with Jagannath, when the, what's his name, came in? That was one of the things. The prime minister went to find out where is the deity, right? Then when he came into the king's garden, and the girls are playing that game, right? And then the king's daughter, she was the one that was blindfolded. So you have to catch somebody, and then just by touching their face or this or that, figure out who it is. And if you can figure out who it is, then they're it, and then you're not anymore. But if you can't, you stay it, right? So going in there, and because all the girls are running around in that, he just suddenly walked in on them. Then the girl who was, that means the daughter of the king, she was the one that was blindfolded. She grabbed this prime minister, this Brahmin. Vidyapati, yeah. And then she's trying to figure out who it is. So everything's going nice till she runs into a mustache. And then she figures something's wrong here, right? You know, so then, at that age, so then it was arranged that they'd be married because then, you know, she had touched him. So like that, then... You know, so that game's been going on then for a long time. You know what I'm saying? So even the games haven't changed. You know what I'm saying? Can you play that game today? Is there something you can't do it? You don't have enough arms to play it or something like that, you know? Does that make sense? So it's very important to understand is nothing's changed. All that's changed is consciousness. Right? So all you have to do is, if that's understood, then purify the consciousness, you can live any lifestyle you like. Does that make sense? It's just a matter of whether you want to do it or not. That's all. Because one can say, no, but everybody's doing. Who is this everybody? Right? Who is this everybody? Right? There's some people going around in suits. Does that mean everybody's wearing suits? Right? There's some people going around, you know, they put on black eyeliner, black lipstick, black fingernails, they wear black clothes, black top hats, like this. You know, there's a whole group of people like that. So everybody's doing like that? No, but they're doing like that, and it's so different from the other people. Right? Then you have the common worker guys, they don't even worry about what they wear, their fashion. Right? Then you have the people who are dressed in high fashion. You understand? So if you look at society, it's made up of so many groups that have nothing to do with each other. Their lifestyles, their dress, their food, their language, everything is different. Right? And they function in the same place in the same time. So why is it that one can't follow the Vedic culture, you know, in the same place in the same time? So if you're saying everybody, but who is this everybody? Everybody means you and your friend. That's it. That's what it means. You understand? So it's very important. Because Srila Prabhupada seeing this, then he was trying to reestablish this Vedic culture. That was one of his purposes. Right? So that means he, having seen it, knew it could be followed. You know, so this idea, oh, times have changed, you can't do all that, those are just excuses. They actually have nothing to do with reality. Absolutely nothing to do with reality. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Okay. Abhay voiced his concern about the conditions in his Back to Godhead. Could the poor eat the nuts and bolts produced in the factories? Could they be nourished by cinema, television, or sex songs on the radio? The leaders were unable to see that abandoning spiritual principles had led to the very ills they officially abhorred, a decadent, rebellious youth, corruption in every area of civic life, and even economic instability. Instability and scarcity. When Abhay had been a youth in Calcutta, there had been no cinema billboards advertising lurid sexual fantasies. But now India had developed the third largest movie industry in the world, and film advertisements were all over Delhi. Beef shops and liquor shops had sprung up. The newspapers regularly ran editorials deploring the degradation of young Indian boys who teased, insulted, and affronted women on the street. Women's leagues complained about increased juvenile promiscuity and the obscene treatment of women in films and advertisements. But there were no upright Brahmins or saintly administrators to do anything about it. So there's this illusion that I will be able to do whatever I want, and at the same time as whatever I actually, the environment will be also just what I want. You know what I'm saying? In other words, a good atmosphere comes from good activities. Right? Proper activity gives a proper atmosphere. But they're thinking that we will, not follow proper activities, right? Be self-centered and selfish and just do things for ourselves. At the same time, we'll create this wonderful environment where everybody feels comfortable and secure and everything like that. You understand? Does that make sense? So the problem is the two don't match. You do good work, you get good result. You do bad work, you get bad result. So they're doing bad work and expecting to get good result. And they're not connecting that they were having so much problem before because of the British and their lifestyle. Now, remove that and then things go back to how nice it was previously. Does that make sense? But they're so foolish or so illusioned that they basically, it comes down to all it was political control. It had nothing to do with Indian culture. Right? The common people, what do they care who's in charge? The man's been in the village, his family's been in that village for generations. So previously the Hindus are running the place. Then after some time the Muslims are running the place. Then after some time the British was running the place, but his life didn't change. You understand? So what does he care who's running the place? What was the government when Lord Chaitanya was here in Mount Navadvip? Who is in charge?
Muslim.
The Muslims. Did they care? No. Only once when the Qazi said no Sankirtan, then they cared. But as long as they didn't bother them, they could perform their religious duties. What does it matter for the general people who's in charge? You understand? So therefore, if you're going to get all the people involved, then you have to say something that they'll be interested in. So the people are living in the villages, and they're comfortable with their culture that's been the same for thousands and thousands of years. So any disturbance they have is coming from the leaders who are not allowing them or are getting in the way of them following their culture. So if you tell them, then we're going to have this independence movement so that we can follow our own culture, right? Then they'll be happy. They'll support. They'll come forward, right? But that's just something that they say to get them interested. That's politics, right? You want to gain power. You say whatever it takes to get it. That's politics. So they said all these nice things. The people get behind. They have the revolution. They get independence. But that was not the purpose of the political leaders. Their purpose was not to reestablish Vedic culture. Their purpose was just, we want to be in charge instead of the British. That's all. That was their only thing. That was their only interest. They had no interest in the Vedic culture. Gandhi did, but he's the front man. You put him in the front, everybody follows Gandhi. But who's making all the arrangements? The politicians. So as soon as they get independence, then the politicians take over, and then the Indian culture is gone. Right? And then, with it being gone, then all these nice problems come up. You know, the youth goes crazy, and then when they're crazy, then they grow up and they become the society. Right? Does that make sense? Just think about it. Means, who would you like to have? Let's say you're in a place, you know, like here, you're in Mayapur, okay? And there are people managing Mayapur and running things, okay? Now, who would you want that to be? You know, someone who was the best kid in the school and he grew up and is now managing Mayapur, or the worst, nastiest, stinkiest, smelliest kid in the school, he grows up and now he's in charge of Mayapur? What do you think? No answer here. Yes?
The good kid.
The good kid. Okay? So, does that mean anything to anybody? Huh? Doesn't mean anything to you. It means because you're already a good kid, so you're going to go on being a good kid, or you're already a crazy kid, and it doesn't matter, you're going to go on and be a crazy kid. Good. Okay. So is that a diplomatic answer, or was that a true answer? You don't know. Okay, you have to speak to your lawyer first. Okay, you understand? So, if everybody's crazy when they grow up, then they'll be the same. You understand? Just all they are is a little bit bigger. And that's all, just as crazy. That makes sense? So if you have a whole society of crazy people, when they grow up, then you have a crazy society. Right? Yes. So Prabhupada's noticing that. So that was his idea, is you make a group of people that aren't crazy. Right? And then they'll be lead society. Right? Does that make sense? And where did he plan to train this group of people who would grow up and lead society? Any idea? Anyone have any idea? Gurukul, yes. So believe it or not, that's why you're here. It's turn into human beings, and so that you can actually lead the society from the human platform. That makes sense? But if you remain as monsters when you grow up, then there's a good chance your leading of the society won't be a human society, but a society of monsters. You know what I'm saying? You know, then the Monster Mash will be the national anthem, right? Okay? Yes? That would be an interesting national anthem. Okay. Abai saw the need for re-spiritualization of society. But society was rushing headlong in the opposite direction. In February, even as Abai was trying to publish his Back to Godhead, Prime Minister Nehru, while speaking with concern of India's crisis of the spirit, simultaneously launched another five-year plan for rapid industrialization. Right? In other words, they just say all these things because they hope the people will get it together, but they'll go on with their economics and all that. So the government's taking no responsibility to make the people God-conscious, to improve the lives of the people, right? Both spiritually and materially. All they're trying to do is improve themselves economically, right? What's the industry do? Does that improve material facility, right? No, what does it do? It creates economics, right? And then those that have the money from that, they may be able to improve their life. But the people that work in the place don't necessarily improve much. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense? So that's the difficulty, is that they're speaking one thing but doing another. They're just hoping people, like the government is hoping people will be moral and all that, but they won't actually see to it that they are. Does that make sense? Everyone from the Prime Minister down to the common man was concerned about the symptomatic problems, but no one seemed to understand that the real problem was the lack of God consciousness, right? They were concerned, but they didn't know what it was from, right? You know, it's just like, let's say, the boys are scratching because of mosquito bites, right? So do the boys like mosquito bites? No. Do they like scratching? No. But does anybody in the room scratching ever connect that maybe if they would close the screen, then the mosquitoes wouldn't come in? Does that point cross their mind? One or two. Most don't even know that the screen door exists, right? What's a screen door, right? A screen door is that obstacle that always gets in the way when you want to go into a room, right? That annoying thing that you're not sure why it's there, yeah? Okay, so you understand the connection? So the same way as everybody's complaining about the social degradation, but they don't understand that it's due to a lack of God consciousness. So they're thinking that if we materially develop, you know, we industrialize, we materially develop, that will be the solution. No, that may get some money, but it won't solve the actual problem, because the problem is social, not economic. You know what I'm saying? Because a person could be poor and be cultured, right? Or a person can be rich and uncultured. So it's not the money, it's actually the training. Yes? No? Maybe we should start a Zombies of the World, you know, Unite program. Okay. Abai had to deliver the medicine for the ills of Kali Yuga. He knew it was needed on a much larger scale than he could reach on his own. But even to administer one issue of Back to Godhead was almost beyond his means. Writing the articles, typing them, taking them to the printer, and distributing them should not have been the work of one lone, impoverished devotee. But in working with his godbrothers, he had met with their decided lack of organization and their lack of desire for vigorous preaching. Bhaktisaranga Goswami had seemed determined to keep Sajjana Toshini small, and his mot, like so many others, had been ineffectual in attracting new members. This was the petty-mindedness that would cripple preaching. Therefore, he was now working alone on a small scale, happy in his spiritual welfare work, yet aware that his four-page newspaper was only a drop of water in the desert. Right? But notice here, the important thing is that to the devotee means the Brahmin is independent. He happily works with others, but as long as that works, if it doesn't, then he'll work on his own. He would rather work on his own than be secure in an environment that's not doing anything. You know what I'm saying? Even though working on his own is more trouble. So we see here, Srila Prabhupada is able to establish the preaching, make an attempt to establish the Vedic culture, all these things. He has to do it on his own. It's difficult, but at least it's going on. Well, in another environment, while he's trying to work with others, and they're not interested. They're too busy trying to manage the mot, or save their money, or make some money, or this or that. Fight with each other. You know, who gets which corner at night to sleep in. You know, stuff like that. Is the door open or closed? Is the light on or off? Like this. You know, important things to fight about. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes? Are all you zombies with us? Yes. You know what a zombie is? What's a zombie? A person.
Monster.
A monster. Okay, but what kind of monster? What sets apart, let's say, a zombie from a cyclops or something? Or a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater? Yes.
They're green.
Huh? They're green. Why are they green? He's getting worried. Did you might bore green cheddars this year, or? Oh, okay, so it seemed to be a fading. They're blending in, huh? So you have to watch out. Now you won't know who's a green monster, because they look the same as everyone else. So anyone can say what a zombie is. Yeah, basically. I mean, traditionally, they're people who are dead that somehow or another are brought to life. Or even, well, actually less, is that it's not exactly that. Is they're alive, but they've how do you say? Generally speaking, they give them some, I think it's some drugs and stuff like that, that makes them so all they can do is basically just kind of do work. But there's no emotions, no interaction, no anything. They're basically speaking dead, but they're not dead, right?
More recently they try to eat you.
That's there, because before just that they walk around and go like this and that, it's not very scary anymore, so they have to try to eat you. But whatever it is, we'll just stick with the older form. Yes.
So they're just crazy?
They're just crazy. Basically they're crazy, but they're in a very quiet, non-interactive, not really awake, don't do anything kind of crazy. You know, kind of like, you know, those sitting in this class in the morning, you know, just sitting there with no interaction, no, you know, the eyes glazed over, you know, kind of like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So that's the, yes? Okay, in February of 1956, while the U.S. was struggling with civil rights, while Khrushchev and Eisenhower were both openly deploring the arms race and were maneuvering in nuclear disarmament talks, and while the Shah of Iran was visiting New Delhi, Abai was trying to print Back to Godhead. Right, so all this, so the American civil rights, because they saw how it worked in India, then they were using the same technique that Gandhi used. These peaceful marches and not fighting, but, you know, showing that everybody was not very satisfied with that. So they used the same technique. Martin Luther King, he used the same technique. And basically in the same, you know, the same technique, he got the freedom for you know, for the civil rights. At the same time, it's like Gandhi, he also got shot. So it seems to be that there is some... There's some application that they used that didn't quite finish. Like Lord Chaitanya he started the civil disobedience movement, but we see the Lord Chaitanya was successful and didn't get shot, right? But somehow or another here, Gandhi was successful in one degree, but not completely, and got shot. Martin Luther King was also successful and got shot. So there's something they didn't quite catch. I'm not, you know, we'd have to, you know, study it, but they missed the point there. I guess the God consciousness may have been the point. But in winter's discomfort, he walked through the early morning streets of Delhi to visit Surendra Kumar Jain, the printer, to read the latest proofs. By walking, he saved money with a proof. Anyone know what a proof is? You know, like an evidence that something's right or not, right? You come up and say, he hit me. Then you have to prove it, so then you have your witness, or you have the mark on your arm and all that, but, you know, stuff like that. Huh? The fingerprint, yes. The fingerprint. See, here's fingerprint. Okay, like that. Proofs mean, in this case, means of the press, they get everything set and they take one page and put it on the press, you know, so that they can check that if it's correct. If it's correct, then they run it and then they print all the copies. If it's not, then they go and change whatever needs to be changed, you know, and then they check again, like that. So the proof means, you know, is, you know, if it's right, if it's correct, right? Your proof is supposed to show if it's correct. So in the printing, then the first page is printed. First page means the first, they print the whatever's to be printed, one copy, and then see if it's correct, right? So, yes, no, that's a proof. What do you think? Okay. And by walking, he saved money. So Prabhupada was very, very careful about money, right? He wouldn't waste like that. Only when he was delivering paper from the paper dealer to the printer would he rent a rickshaw. He had no charter, only a lightweight cotton jacket, and he wore rubber shoes. He also wore a cotton hat that covered his ears and tied beneath his chin, protecting him from the 40-degree wintry mornings and the sometimes gusty winds. So 40 degrees, that would be Fahrenheit, so it's probably like, I don't know, 5-6 degrees like that in centigrade, so very cold. Kumar Jain. My first impression was that he was a nice person and straightforward. I felt pity also because of the conditions under which he would come. I know he didn't have even 25 paisa. He would come all the way on foot and without any breakfast or anything. He would come in the morning to the press. And when I would ask him, Swamiji, did you have anything to eat this morning? He would say, oh no, Mr. Jain, I just came because I had to see the proofs. That's all right, I would say. I'll get breakfast for you. I would call for breakfast and then he would sit and work. He would do the proof reading himself. The printing was done by me. And most of the time he would like to be present when that final printing was being done. He would come in the morning around 7 and stay until he had seen all the proofs. It was a regular thing that he would come without breakfast. I would arrange for breakfast and he would sit across the table, and we would sit across the table from one another for hours together. He was always talking on religious subjects only. But when we would be sitting, especially when waiting for the proofs to come, we would discuss many things. I felt that he knew quite a lot because he was a well-read person. He was more a friend than just a person coming to get things printed. He was a very simple man, straightforward in his habits, but his mission at that time was particularly to further the movement of Back to Godhead. Right, so we see is that, you know, he's saying Prabhupada would come, he's just simple, he's coming to do his work, and that he's not asking for anything, but because of the condition, you can see he's not trying to take advantage. He's not coming not eating breakfast, knowing Mr. Jain will arrange breakfast. No, it's that he's just coming to see the proofs. So Mr. Jain is arranging. Then he's saying that they would talk on spiritual subject matters, but when they would just sit and are like you're eating breakfast or something, you don't get into heavy subject matter. So he could talk on anything. So many subjects he could talk on and this and that. So he could see probably it was very well read. But you would always be able to bring all these things back into God consciousness. That's the thing. So he knew much about the world, but he knew how to also see it in relation to the Krishna. Right? Otherwise, if you just know about the world, don't know how to see it in relation to Krishna, not so important. Right? Does that make sense? But here we see, you just know the philosophy, that's all you move in, that's very nice, that's fine. Right? But if you're going to know more, then you should know how to connect it to Krishna. Right? Then you can talk to so many people about so many subject matters. And from whatever subject matter, then you can get to Krishna. So that's very good. Yes? No? Right? You like to talk? Yes. No? You don't like to talk? Oh, excuse me. Wrong question. Do you like to shout and yell and scream? Sometimes. Okay. Okay. When the other person's not yelling and screaming. Okay. Oh, you take turns. See? The culture here, one yells and screams, then he waits while the other one yells and screams and everything. This way then, what is it? Bodha yaschanti parasparam. You know, interaction between... Now that's an interesting, like, garlands or something that he's wearing. Okay, then this is continuing. Kumar Jain is speaking here. His financial condition was very, very weak. Sometimes the printing would be difficult because he was not able to arrange for the paper. Many times I told him that if he was feeling difficulty, why was he continuing? But he said, no, it is my mission, and I will always carry it out. I will always carry it on as far as possible. I tried to accommodate him to the maximum possible extent, but he was a real pauper. What's a pauper? A poor man, not those like round things that you put on the fire and everything like that. That's not a pauper.
Also,
it's also a pauper. It's a different spelling of pauper. Okay. Okay, and then what about the guy who dances in the street and he does all these square things like this and all that stuff? That's also a pauper. Never heard about him. No. Well, there's so many of them. And then what about the one that wears, you know, the maid and everything like that, and she, you know, by her hat she flies around? Huh? Oh, because that's Mary Poppins. Okay, so so many paupers are there. So now this pauper means which pauper? Because this is talking about the real pauper, right? So does that mean the real Slim Shady, or who are they talking about here as the real pauper? A poor man. Okay, so then Prabhupada was very poor, so therefore he was making the saying that he didn't have anything, right? So he wasn't saying that Prabhupada was out in the street dancing or doing stuff like that. He wasn't. Yeah, he was a real pauper. I only did the printing, and he had to arrange for the paper. So sometimes it was delayed. Although my job was printing, sometimes I would say, all right, you are so keen, I will give you the paper. But usually he would arrange for it himself. Since we only did printing, he would bring it in a rickshaw. We were not uncomfortable together, but as business would have it, if the bills were standing for a long time, then I would ask him if he could do something about it. And he would say, don't worry, you can be sure that your money is coming. I never asked him where his funds were coming from, because I felt that it was his personal matter. But it was embarrassing for him when he would not pay, so I never tried to embarrass him. He was concerned that if he didn't have money, how could he print the paper? And he definitely wanted to run that paper. You know, so you can see is that it's a mission. So therefore, he would try to help however he can. He wouldn't try to disturb because he was so committed to the mission that you know he's going to print. To print, then you have to pay at some point, right? So therefore, he wasn't worried that, you know, he was going to get his money or anything like that. So everything worked very nicely. So then, yeah, continuing here. He wanted to preach the teachings of the Gita. He thought of it as a sort of movement. That was the only way that people in the world could find peace. his conviction was very strong. Right? So you see all these different persons are talking, it comes up like that. That's because actually Satsarup Maharaj, who wrote the book, he actually went around and talked to all those people. So anything that anybody knew, he first talked to the devotees, anybody who was around, all the disciples. Then from there, they would mention stories where Prabhupada would mention people or in different conversations. Then Satsarup Maharaj would go find those people and then talk to them and then get more, right? So therefore you have, him, as the regular thing, holding everything together, describing what's there. But then sometimes where it was would be nicer, then he actually has the person speaking themselves. Like that. So all these different people that are there, he actually went and talked to. So those, they were all there then. Now it may be hard to find them. But after picking up the copies from the printer, Abhay would walk around the city selling them. He would take a seat at a tea stand, and when somebody sat beside him, Abhay would ask him to please take a copy of Back to Godhead. He also went to the homes and offices of people who had already donated or agreed to see him, and he sought out new contacts, sometimes on recommendation or sometimes by going uninvited, wherever he could find a potential reader. When he delivered copies to regular donors, he would discuss the previous issue's philosophy with them and sometimes write articles on topics they requested. Quote, our esteemed friend, Sri Bishan Prashad Maheshwari, one of the learned advocates of the Supreme Court, has requested us to write something on the principle of fruit of action with special reference to vice and its potency. So Prabhupada go out to distribute these things, the pamphlets, the Back to Godhead, himself. So he would go sit at tea stalls, because people will come to the tea stalls. When they sit down, he'll sell them copies. People that have already taken copies, he'll follow up on them. People who actually want to get them regularly, he goes to them. And then whenever he sees an opportunity to go, somebody's house or business, he just walk in like that. And then when he would meet especially the regular persons like that, then he would discuss with them how they liked it, what they thought about the articles. They would discuss these things, and sometimes they would ask, why don't you print a certain article on a certain topic? And then he would say that this person requested it, right? Like that. So nicely he would reciprocate. Often donors agreed to see him not so much out of genuine interest or affection as out of a sense of obligation. In their traditional Hindu piety, they felt obliged to see the sadhu, take his paper, and even think well of him, but not necessarily to read his paper. Once, when Abhay was approaching a well-to-do house, the owner came onto the second floor veranda and shouted, go away, we don't want you here. By responding to the resistance, polite and impolite, that he met while selling Back to Godhead, wrote an article, No Time, A Chronic Disease of the Calming Man, for the March 16th edition. Okay, so we'll read that on Thursday. Like that. That's nice, Just nobody has time. They're so busy, they have no time. Like that. So time for everything but God. So that's the problem. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. John, Srila Prabhupada ki. Is that warm? Is that wool? Is that the wool coat? You don't know.